Hello and welcome to Wonder Pod, episode 259. We are two men this week, so who knows what that means, because it's also a week of I don't feel like talking about anything going on in gaming, or, well, I could probably make a show about sports, even not knowing John's level of sports knowledge, but I think that might be a little too far for Wonder Pod. joining us this week, as he always does, it's John.
Hey, everybody. I am one day out from Canada Day. July 1st is a big one around these parts. And got a day off work yesterday. It was nice. I could really get used to a four-day work week with a break in the middle. I know people would rather have a three-day weekend, but the break in the middle is not bad, you know?
Do you like that?
I don't know. If I had a bunch of them, I probably would get kind of annoyed, I guess. But I don't know. But it just seemed like it was nice knowing on Tuesday I was having a day's break, and then now it's nice knowing that I only have 2 days to go. But, you know, three days in a row is nice, too, I suppose. I don't know.
I'm not making fun of you with this, but is one day out, doesn't that mean one day until? Or have I been using it wrong for years?
What do you mean?
You said one day out from what? That always means to me like it's one day to go. Maybe it's
okay. Well, yesterday was Canada Day.
Yeah, I know that. I know enough Canadians. It's interesting how the Confederation and America's birth, obviously, what was it, at least 150 years apart. My apologies, Canadian listeners. I don't remember when the fuck your country became a country. I can barely remember what day it is. Leave me alone. But it was actually that close, and given the proximity of our two countries. Mm-hmm. You know, I just find it kind of interesting. I don't think there's any it has anything to do with anything. I just it's one of those just interesting little anecdotes.
It's weird how it's so close, and it seems like in the work week, if you have any kind of, for us anyway, if we have any kind of American clients or people that we contact, like we're out one day and then a couple of days later, the American client is gone. So it kind of throws off the entire work week.
Well, with the 4th being on a Saturday, I would suspect that most businesses will give their employees Monday off. I don't know what the federal holiday is. Oh, yeah. Does it say on... Sometimes it'll say, like on American calendars, it'll say such and such day observed, which usually means the holiday, and I don't see that on the 3rd. So I'm guessing it's probably... Oh, I don't see it on Monday either.
That's strange. Usually it's the Monday.
Yeah, if the 4th falls on a Friday, it'll be the Friday. But yeah, it does disrupt business. There have been people, and sometimes wonder their motivations, calling for, well, maybe this shouldn't be a holiday, and that shouldn't be a holiday, and this shouldn't be a holiday. You're disrupting business. In some cases, I think it is truly, it's disrupting business. In some cases, it's like, oh, snarkerton. You know, nothing super, like, underhanded or agenda pushing. Just, I don't know, just trying to make change for change's sake because you don't like tradition kind of garbage. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of the whole Valentine's Day thing. Oh, that's just a made-up holiday to bilk your wallet. Well, yeah, really, aren't they all? I mean, outside of the founding of your country, isn't really the rest of it, to some sense, just an excuse for one thing or another? You know, because I'm pretty sure the hot dog manufacturers in North America between Canada Day and the 4th of July, you know, Independence Day in America, make a killing. Mm-hmm. Me, I personally prefer a good steak, but I'm not feeding that to 50 of my friends either. Hot dogs it is. Did you see this week, and I never did see if it was confirmed or if he was in trouble, I don't even know if he's under contracts these days, that the Big Show finally admitted that the famous spot with him and Lesnar was the work of their prop guy, not he actually went through the ring.
Oh, you mean the ring collapsing from the suplex off the top rope?
Right, and then he went through it. Yeah. Oh, yeah, well, yeah, excuse me. Yeah, the whole ring collapsed in that particular spot.
Yeah, it was so nice that they did it twice, because it wasn't that long ago. It was only, I want to say, 4 years ago that Big Show and Mark Henry did a similar thing, and the ring collapsed then, too.
Well, my problem is that was not so much the Mark Henry one. I'm vaguely recalling having seen clips of that. But the Lesnar versus Big Show one was such an awesome spot on its own that I kind of wish Show had never said anything. You're always going to have the smark fucking, you're not smart marks anymore. You're just fucking smarks. And I don't want to call you smirk because that actually has a nice connotation, you jerks. You know, you're always going to have the tinfoil helmet smarks that think they know way more about the damn bit business than the people behind it. I mean, honestly, that one, oh, of course, somebody texts me the one phone I don't turn down. My apologies. Of course, the concept of a ring falling apart on its own, even with two guys of the size of Lesnar and Big Show, who never was 500 pounds, like how he's on Jericho's podcast, keeps saying he was 500 pounds when he never really was legitimately. You know, I think, and it actually came out of his own mouth. I think he was 485 was the highest he ever was actually, which is still pretty close to 500.
Well, they always overbill a little bit, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like saying Charles Barkley was 6'6" when he was in his prime, and dude's like 6'4".
Yeah.
You
Well, yeah.
know?
Though he was, I was listening to a part of that podcast that you mentioned, the Jericho one, and he said when he joined WCW, he was legit 7'3" and 380.
Like,
Now,
okay, so he's legitimately 7'3".
yeah, and I mean, I don't know if he's a little shorter now or not, or I'm not sure how his condition works in his age, but he said he was 7'3", 380 when he went into WCW.
I just got this text from Agent K, and now I'm going to put it on the podcast and make fun of him. He is currently in the Scottish Highlands, sort of on vacation, but since he works from home, he's never really on vacation.
Oh, yeah.
There's a fucking man standing on the moor in the rain. What the fuck? That's terrifying. I'm thinking about typing him back here in a second. It was nice knowing you. Now, okay, now the conversation's getting to the point where, well, now Quiglin, who has been on the show, is making fun of him by telling him to send his girlfriend out to investigate it. Would be true, she's the tougher of the two. He is gonna kill me. See, this is the beauty of it. I know he doesn't listen to their podcast. We're friends, but we're not that good of friends, apparently. See, I could say all this shit and get away with it. Although, honestly, people, if you think, oh, look, he's talking smack about a friend and you never hear. Honestly, three quarters of this crap that I usually say about him, if I remember it, that's the sinister part. If I remember it, being the ancient internet guy, I tell him the next day, and oh, God, I gotta put my phone on silent because now they're in a conversation. It's funny, these two won't talk for like 2 days and then it's like 30 minutes long. Okay, it's on silent. Sorry, again. But one of them's probably going to wind up dead because that sounds like the start to a cheesy horror movie. Anyway, but I just thought it was just, because now I saw some stuff on Twitter that John Canton of the John Report, do you follow him?
I don't know.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, he's an interesting guy. I would recommend his Twitter feed at least for a trial. He's pretty middle of the road. He's Canadian as well. I know him because he was part of the Oratory way back in the day, along with Raja.com or whatever the hell it is, maybe the Rajas.net. But he was fielding questions about, oh, that must mean the choke slam through the mat was faked too, and all this was faked, and Mick going through the cage, and it's like. It just opened up the floodgates to all these great moments that I don't want to know. I mean, I understand physics, I understand gravity, but it somehow cheapens the memory of that immediate pop you got when the whole ring blew apart, or when Mick went through the canvas. Or, I think who the hell did Taker chokeslam through the damn ring? Or Kane, I can't remember who did it.
He choke slammed Mick Foley through the top of the cage, and
No,
he.
no. But there was one choke slam, and I don't remember who did it.
Oh, it was Big Show. He choke slammed Big Show through the ring.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
I mean, that one's not as iconic as the Hell in the Cell one. And honestly, if I was to give a rating on which one I think was legitimate, probably the Mick Foley Hell in the Cell ones have the most.
Yeah, I mean. The tale the tale that's always told is that Mick knew that the toss off the cage was coming, but going through the cage he did not.
I actually believe that. Mick, Mick kind of pissed me off with the whole writing a chapter about knowing when your time to go away was and not be a prostitute. And, like, as I'm reading that chapter while he's still kind of towards the tail end of his career, I'm thinking, this was the stupidest thing you ever could have written because you've now painted yourself in a corner.
Yeah.
You know, and so I wasn't, like, mad, but I was just disappointed. It's like, don't put all this thought and passion into writing why it makes you a prostitute to come back, even when you're just too far gone to be that entertaining. And then do it. Just leave it be, because then people give you, you know, it just kind of cheapened what he did after the book came out. And then as he always had the mic work skills, obviously, but... But no, I think there was a lot that happened in that first Foley Hell in the Cell match that was not planned in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a fair bit of improv going on there.
But all that does is give the people looking for an excuse to rage at the WWE, and I'm even talking fans. That's kind of the sad part about wrestling. It's a lot of its fans that actually do it, not just people who don't like wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought it was really stupid. Is he still under contract with WWE?
Mick, you mean?
No, Show.
Oh, Show. Oh, of course, yeah. He's still an active wrestler. He's currently feuding with Ryback over the IC title. But I think what they usually do is when a guy wins a belt and they want to give him a little bit of a push to start off his title reign, they stick him with Show, because Show doesn't seem to mind putting guys over.
No, he never has. I've always been very. I've had a lot of respect for Paul White with the way he's willing to do stuff. You know, because Andre kind of thought, I'm this big a guy, I should win all the time. You know, they weren't even sure about what was that, WrestleMania 1 or 2, whether he was going to put Hogan over or not.
On 3, yeah.
Three, excuse me. My apologies.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, Paul White's always seemed like, hey, I'll go with it. He's always had that kind of gentle giant attitude, the interviews I've seen with him. Mm-hmm. You know, which is good, because when you're that big, there's not many people stopping you.
No, he can kind of do what he wants.
Yeah, I mean, I could see maybe Brock Lesnar taking him in a street fight, but only because of how powerful Lesnar is and the tool sets Lesnar has. And not too many other people who would probably, even at Show's current age, would take him in a street fight. But yeah, I don't know. Did it bother you when you heard about it? I mean, for some reason, it just bothered me. It's like, why say it now?
About the ring?
Yeah.
I had, in my mind, I had assumed that it was rigged anyway. Even though it happened on like a random SmackDown.
Right.
It did have a nice sense of spontaneity, but I don't think I ever thought it legitimately busted underneath their weight. You know, maybe me being the smart mark that I am.
Well, no, you're definitely a smart mark. There can be more than two categories. There's being gentle and nice about being a smart mark, and then there's the asshole smart approach. Don't ever think that, thank you for saying that, John, because it's like, don't ever think that I don't like all marks who are interested in the inner workings. I don't like the, well, he's made a pretty good fucking career out of it. I don't like the Dave Metzlers of this world. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
but hey, more power to Metzler. Back in the old PW days, if you'd have told me he's still making a living at it now, I'd have told you right.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I knew that it wasn't. It wasn't a thing that happened. They just happened. You know, it wasn't spontaneous. I don't know. It just didn't seem like there was any point to it. You're just giving fuel to the faction, to the wrong factions with that. You know, I saw it on that SmackDown, and it's like, oh wow. You know, you get that oh shit pop for a minute, and then your brain, if you're rational and got a few brain cells to spare, thinks about it and goes, okay, it was probably. You know, the way Show explained it, they put airbags up, the whole fucking thing fell down.
Okay.
Which Show said, him climbing to the top rope with the fucking thing on airbags, he's like, I didn't know if my big ass was going to make it. You stop and think about how agile Sho has to be, even at that size, because the ring's wobbling even more. It's sitting on basically stuntman or house moving airbags. You know? I don't know. Sometimes I just don't think when things go on for that long that just shutting up about it seems like the best course of action. Let the fans decide. Let the fans have their own memories of it.
Well, I mean, it's like the magician who tells you how he cut the lady in half, right?
Right.
It's nice. It's nicer to not maybe not know.
Yeah, as much as I love knowledge, as much as I love learning how things work, magic is one of those ones. Like, I didn't like that guy that did that Sho for a while where he was revealing how all the tricks were done. I never watched an episode of it. Now, I didn't want to kill him like some magicians did, but I just, there's certain things in life, and it's kind of a case-by-case basis where I just don't need to know. I have a good memory of that, even though it was Sho and Lesnar, not the two greatest workers of all time. But it had to be those two for that kind of a power event.
Well, they were definitely the biggest pair of dudes on the roster.
Right.
I mean, the second time it happened, it was kind of fun. I mean, that was, like I said, that was a random SmackDown that happened on. The second time it happened on the second last match, or either the second last or third last match of a pay-per-view. So they had to wrestle the rest of the event on a broken ring. So it was all slanty, and while they were trying to work a, I think it was like a fatal four way or a triple threat or something, but a broken ring. That was kind of fun. It was like the ropes were down and everything. They couldn't. It was nothing. So, but it was pretty good.
Well, you
Yeah.
know, Mark Henry's Sho, you know, because Lesnar's a big guy, but he doesn't weigh a lot.
Yeah.
Sho and Henry, I could see breaking a ring legit.
Yeah.
That's a lot of flubber flying around.
I can't remember who gave who the I know Brock gave Sho the big slam, and then I don't remember if it was Mark Henry who gave Sho the slam or vice versa. I can't remember.
I want to say it was Henry that gave it to Sho. And I
Probably.
think with Lesnar, wasn't it a release German? Like a reverse release German? Because there's no way
No,
it's.
it was a regular suplex.
Oh, was it? Okay.
A regular vertical suplex.
Yeah, but again, I thought it'd be interesting since Glace isn't, you know, we're not going to kill any enthusiasm Glace has for the Sho talking about it. Because, like I said, I guess bottom line, and that's what kind of why I wanted to talk it out. It doesn't really bother, it doesn't seem like it really bothers you at all. You got your oh shit moment, but you knew at the same time it was most likely staged.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I can when I'm watching there, I can't believe they just did that, more so than, like I can pop for it, I mark for it because, if I can mark for a regular match, I can mark for a big moment like that too.
Right.
Despite watching wrestling for 30 years or whatever it's been, I still have that ability to let it go and just enjoy it for what it is.
Well, it's almost like if you really wanted to get behind the curtain or inside baseball, as you talk about, it's almost like a plot twist in a good drama. You know, you're just expecting, okay, Lesnar's gonna slam him, pin him. Lesnar's the unstoppable beast. I think that's what they were still booking him as then.
Of course, yeah.
My memory's foggy, so sorry. Or it's just not foggy, it's just not good. You know, and so that would have been a pretty typical match, but then to see the ring blow apart, I guess, like I said, after discussing, I guess it just boils down to it bothers me that somehow we need to have some finality in this never really was a controversy thing. You know, it's kind of interesting because the WWE denied it so hard. I'm surprised they let Sho go ahead and talk about it. I'd have to believe that they knew he was going to talk about it, or he got his ass fined out the moon.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's 2015 now. I mean, it's pretty well open season for everything now. There's no kayfabe, if you will, if anymore, really. I mean, they with podcasts and insider stuff, and I mean, Christ, on the WWE Network, Stone Cold Steve Austin has a monthly video podcast where he talks to whoever about whatever he basically wants. I'm sure there's some filter, but more or less, he's talking about characters. He's talking about, setups and booking, and not keeping in storyline talk or character talk at all.
Right, but I mean, I think to I understand that, but if you're going to put out the denial, you see what I'm saying? It
Yeah.
seemed like WWE felt they had a reason to put out the denial. Why all of a sudden the 180 now? It's never been their thing.
Well, the other thing too is that sometimes it feels like when enough time has passed, they're willing to like just talk about it as what it is rather than within the story. Like, it's a funny thing. Like, they've interviewed Hogan on WWE TV saying, "We weren't sure if Andre the Giant was gonna let me go over." You know what I mean?
Right.
But back then, you would never hear such talk.
I wonder if that one's a little different because with Andre dying so young, that one came out pretty quickly, even in some of their compilation tapes back in the day. That story got out pretty quickly. So that one seems more like it's Hogan, Andre's gone now. That one seems like it'd be a pretty comfortable fit for WWE. Usually when they the reason I chuckled in the middle of your comment there was I was thinking to myself, well, I guess Vince is gonna have to die before we find out exactly what happened at the Montreal Screwjob. Because that's one they still hold on to. I mean, Brett's told his side, Sean's told his side, the goons have told, kind of told whatever they could tell. I still don't think we've gotten, 100% clarity on the exact situation.
I have to imagine that the version of events by Vince McMahon is whatever he's decided it's going to be, and as much as he might know, I'm sure he believes whatever version he believes he.
Oh, right, but I'm just saying that somebody knows or documented as best as able the unfiltered series of events. It's just Vince doesn't want those out because he has this narrative of his own, and so it's going to take his passing before the unfiltered version comes out. Because I don't see Stephanie and Shane giving much of a shit about it. It was before their time, quote unquote.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone ever talks about it, it might be Triple H. He was in the vicinity of it all, and friends with Michaels and stuff at the time. So I don't know. It's whenever Vince goes, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, on a much bigger scale than just that, how things will change and evolve, because it'll be quite different.
Well, I mean, I always felt, and saying this to a Canadian, and with Canadians listening, I'm taking my life into my hands. I always felt that Brett got the worse end of the deal, but Brett brought a lot of it on himself and didn't look at the fact that what WCW had done to WWF previously. And a lot of what WCW did was classless. The whole championship in the trash can, all that stuff, it just turned me off to them. That's too far the other way in heel. In that time period, it worked with the general viewing audience, but it was just like to me, really? I was flipping between Nitro and Raw, and I saw the, was it Medusa? Yeah, Medusa, and I was like, really, guys? Because it's almost the Sony effect. You're winning. You know what I mean? You are the clear winner here, and you're just rubbing glass caked salt in the wound. And I mean, I'm a bastard, but that's like, I won't do that. It's like, I whipped your ass. That's good enough for me. I'm not gonna make you feel, I'm not gonna make it worse. Winning is enough. And it
Well, I
never
mean,
was for Bischoff and the guys at Turner.
Roddy Piper has a podcast as well, and I've often heard him talk about how he was backstage with, having, Bischoff had called some sort of a meeting, and with all of the talent, and he comes into the room and he says that nobody in the room has ever drawn a dime other than Hogan and Piper, and it doesn't matter because and don't worry about that because within 4 weeks, WWE would be bankrupt and gone.
Yeah.
Hooray, hooray for us! And Piper's point was, who cares? I'm working for the company that I'm working for. What does this have to do with our show? Nothing. We should just try to put the best show on as the best show as possible. And he never did understand why it was so important to kill him off and not have everyone coexist and have places to work and have a healthy industry rather than someone trying to kill the other.
Well, it's always manifested incorrectly, and he wasn't quite as forthcoming as I'd liked, but I picked up Bischoff's book in the airport when I was traveling back in, you know, the 07.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Right.
Yeah, and what the hell, what the money something, I don't remember. I should really give it.
Controversy and cash or something.
Yeah, cash. And he talks about that's just how his competitive nature manifests. And okay, so that makes sense, but even that, even a go-for-the-throat athlete like Kobe Bryant, like Michael Jordan, like Tom Brady, like, you know, I'm trying to think of some more who are just real killers, didn't give a flying shit, Shaquille O'Neal. They knew where the line was for the most part. You know, they're not going to be doing the, well, Reggie Miller did it, and it backfired horribly. You know, the choke sign at Spike Lee like Reggie Miller did when they were kicking his shit out of the Knicks. They knew where the line was because they knew that they were just absolutely beating your brains out. The verbal carnage didn't need to happen. You know, Kobe Bryant's got a lot of issues. There's some people that don't like him from his legal troubles. There's some people who don't like his attitude. But one thing I respect about Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan, too, is the fact that they just fucking absolutely killed you on the floor and didn't say two words to you.
Yeah.
You know, as far as for the general public to hear, obviously there's the on-court trash-talking. MJ did a ton of that, as do a lot of basketball players. Hell, I do it playing pickup basketball with my friends because it's fun. It's part of the game. You know, it's just part of the fun. You're not saying anything that's going to hurt anybody's feelings, but you're just having fun. And that's what I always felt like with Bischoff and Turner. They're like they had to just run their mouths as well as putting on a superior product at the time. And in a way, it made me root for the WWF, even though that's who I kind of preferred anyway because it's who I grew up with.
Right.
But, you know, and so, yeah, the screw job. I might trust Triple H's account if he was completely unfettered access to speak his mind. I think he gets a bad rap for being a lackey too much of the time, as I've said before. But I still would much rather have a much, much more neutral perspective on it. You know? And just because I don't think it would change my opinion of how that went down. They could have treated Brett better. Brett could have been a little more forgiving. Or, you know, a little more, could have compromised with him a little more. Because honestly, I don't think Brett would have done what Medusa did and what, you know, what some of the other wrestlers that jumped ship did verbally. But when it's happened to you that many times and your relationship's not that great with Brett to begin with, it's why he's leaving the company. Mm-hmm. I could kind of understand how Vince would be worried about it. Yeah. Hey, Vince ain't no peach himself.
No.
But then again, he's pretty much stayed the course and run every major competitor he's had off. I mean, yeah, TNA's pretty much done. WCW went down in a pile of flames.
Yeah, it's amazing with that, this touch on the screw job one more time, how much a gift that was to WCW, because I mean that should, when Brett walked in the door, that should have been a ready made, you know, storyline or motivation for Brett to you know, really do well down there. But boy, oh boy, did they ever squander it. He didn't do anything really of much note, and then he got hurt by Goldberg, and that was it. I mean, I don't think Brett was very motivated down there anyway, but geez, they could have done so much more with him.
I think Brett was so hurt personally by what happened in Montreal. And it always kind of made me laugh because most of the Canadians I've known, if they're from the West, that's where, you know, like it would have made him madder if he'd been in Calgary. Mm. That was kind of what always struck me as odd, too, is like, that's Eastern Canada, dude. We're not in Calgary. We're not in Skydome. No, that's Toronto. My bad. My bad, people. You know, so the as an American who didn't at that time know any Canadians, it always struck me as, well, as I know you and Pat and others, you know, I'd been to Canada by that point, but it always struck me as like, dude, this isn't your hometown. I understand that you're very proud to be a Canadian and this, that, and the other thing, but I always felt that it was like, I could probably have tolerated, you know, putting myself in Brett's shoes. I could tolerate having it done to me in America, but if it'd been like in my home, obviously my hometown's not going to host a pay-per-view, but if it'd been done in Sacramento, let's say, you know, an hour and a half drive from my hometown, that probably would have made me as mad as Brett, it made Brett. But again, I just think that I don't think they worked with Brett right and WCW, and I think the screw job took so much out of him and just made him lose so much love for the sport, love for the game, that, and he's even kind of hinted as much at that.
Yeah, he has.
You know, and Bischoff talked about it too, that Brett just wasn't the same, and we really didn't know what to do with him.
Yeah.
You know, Bischoff was. WCW went more down due to, and the Smarks hate this shit being said too. WCW more went down to the fact that AOL and Turner, or AOL and Warner Brothers, didn't understand wrestling than anything Bischoff did.
Well, they saw that. I mean, they wanted nothing to do with it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, once that all that deal went down, it was, you know, the writing was on the wall anyway. With, you know, if, there was no second chances. They didn't want it in the first place.
No, they didn't see it as part of their corporate image,
Yeah,
and
like Ted kept it on there, in the
well,
early,
yeah, Ted.
even before they got huge.
Ted Turner's always been kind of a Southern hillbilly. Yeah, you know, he's like politically a big time liberal or whatever, but he's always kind of been a Southerner. You know, wrestling, all the rest of that stuff.
Well,
NASCAR.
he watched wrestling when he was a kid,
Yeah, exactly.
and he had on his network, and he wanted to keep it on his network, and when it wasn't his to make the calls anymore, that was it.
Yeah, they did about the same thing to Turner too, because they promised him he'd have a lot more say and a lot more control. And once Warner got his foot in the door, Time Warner got his foot in the door, it was adios Turner. Which Ted's a smart enough guy. I think he probably knew that there was a 60% shot that was going to happen to him anyway. You know, I don't agree with everything Ted Turner has ever had come out of his mouth, and dating Jane Fonda just didn't help it, or being married to her or whatever. And not, and I don't have a problem with Fonda because of the whole Vietnam thing. That would be my parents' generation. I just always thought she was a moron that didn't know what she was talking about. You know, because I don't have a problem necessarily with celebrities being involved in causes, but know what the fuck you're talking about. You know, like I'm about had it with Jim Carrey and his ilk. You know, the anti-vaxxers that don't have a concept of what they're talking about. They have no facts. It's just rhetoric and emotion. You know, the celebrities that actually research their causes, I'm okay with. I don't care if they're a celebrity. Actually, I expect that of all people. If you're going to be involved in a cause, know what you're talking about, please. Kind of deal. But Turner didn't give a shit. He was done being running television. He made a pile of money, and I don't think he is anymore, but he used to be the second largest private landholder in the U.S. Which is a good investment. A lot of it was cattle ranches. I've actually been on a property that was owned by him at one point or another, I do believe, for a fishing trip. Which doesn't make me special, just it's denoting it. The other thing, I see you have a future. I don't know a good Canadian soccer player, so my apologies. I'm going with my current favorite retired one. A future Landon Donovan on your
Sure.
hands.
Yeah, that person. yeah, Peter
You have
is
no idea who Landon Donovan is, do you?
I don't watch soccer, so I
No,
don't
it's
know.
fine. It's fine. I was
But
just like, you shit.
he started up soccer on for this summer on Tuesday, and he's been doing quite well. He's you know his group. Well, it's funny. He was in it last year, and he did pretty good, but he wasn't as coordinated as he is now that he's five. And I think what helps him be a little more coordinated over some of the other boys and girls is that he was born in March, so he's you know some of these kids were born in December, so
Right.
an 8 month gap at five is it can be a little bit big. But yeah, he's actually surprising me a bit how how focused he is, because last year he was he'd get the ball, and if he didn't control it the whole time and get a chance to shoot it, he'd come over and he'd go, "Oh, it's not fair. I can't do it, Daddy, and I'm too tired." But now he's just running around and taking the ball and you know, guarding it while he's dribbling it up the field, and I'm like, where did he learn this stuff? But I guess it's just being a little bit older, right? And a little bit older than the other kids, like I said. His team kind of reminded me like the Bad News Bears or something, where like everyone, some of these kids seem like a little bit more like the Little Misfits, because they're one kid is, you know, really lovey-dovey with the coaches. All he wants to do is hug them. and another kid, she tried to kick the ball and she missed, and then she immediately stormed off the pitch and went with her folks and sulked for the rest of the game, and you know, these kinds of funny little things. I mean, there's a few kids that are keeping just as good as, you know, keeping up as Peter is, but there's a couple that are just not really into it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but that's the point of U7. I don't know how they classify it in Canada, but like that, we didn't start at 4. I've played my first year of soccer at 5.
Yeah, well, this is they have this is the house league. This isn't like they go in there and they play basically soccer based games for the first, you know, half of the first half or three quarters of the hour, and then they play a short game or two amongst themselves. And so it's not serious in any stretch. It's just getting them used to the idea of dribbling the ball up and down the field and you know, drills disguised as games, right? But, you know, and so there's under 4, under 5, and under 6. And once you get to under 6, there is a little, what they call the academic league, which is a little more, they play actual games and teach them actual rules of the game rather than kind of just general rules. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I would say that our league was basically the same. Like, we won, I can't remember if we won the under 7 championship the first year. I've got about 4. I was not that good. I would say I was above average. I was a defender, halfback, I guess it would be. But we had this kid on there that if soccer in the U.S. was where it was at, where it is at now, then he would have played professional for the MLS. Gary Antone was his name. I feel comfortable saying it because nobody listens to the show lives around here, and I don't know where he's at today. Just an amazing kid playing at soccer. And so we won a lot solely because of him. But I do remember the first year, and partway through the second year, it was a lot of don't coach the kids. If one of them doesn't feel like running anymore and wants to come over and try and con the coaches out of orange slices, then okay. You know, if there's a halfback all the way up the field in the forward position, you don't say much. Which, yeah, for a little smart-ass, sarcastic asshole like me, was great because I wanted to play forward. I was better at defense, I do have to admit. Still am. Still, I still probably would be even today if I was growing up now. I'm much more in the trenches kind of guy when it comes to sports, and that's a good place to be. But you know, so I would sneak up to the center line and hope. You know, your chances at 5 or 6 years old of hitting the goal from the center hash, it's pretty astronomical. I'm not sure even without a goalie I could hit it today. And I probably could. But in cleats. But, you know, but that's how your little brain works. Mm-hmm. But the funny thing is my memories from that, you know, I think it would be different today, because as much as some of the PC politically correct crowd loves to put it's not about wins and losses, we're not going to count wins and losses, it's even more so than it was in our childhood. Yeah. Because I've got, like, I think 5 or 6 plaques, a couple trophies, and 2 or 3 medals from soccer. And I only played till U12. You know, so we were on pretty good teams from my area. And I don't remember being all that excited about winning or losing. It was just playing with other kids. Mm-hmm. Those are the memories I take away from it, that my personal memories are playing with other kids. I mean, I have to admit, I am horrible about taking compliments. I'm horrible about hearing praise. I just, you know, because I expect when I do good things, I expect to do good things. I don't, you know, I don't, it's like, I'm more irritated when I fuck up. But I honestly am kind of happy that's my memory of it. And I hope that's what Peter gets out of it. He's just having fun playing with other kids. Because that's, honestly, that's what sports taught me how to behave, how to work in a group, all that stuff that it's supposed to teach. But it also just it was getting to meet new kids. You know, none of them remained lifelong friends in any of the youth sports I played. But they remained friends throughout that time period.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what's so cool when I saw you, you know, I saw you post about him shooting 4 goals. And this is our show. We'll do whatever the fuck we want with it. you know, I thought I would say something because, you know, even if he's just playing in what you're talking about, that's a great thing. I got so much out of youth sports, even being a quote unquote nerd now.
Yeah,
that I'm really glad I did it. I mean, obviously some people just aren't cut out to play sports, you know, either physically or quote unquote. How do I put this? It's just not for them, mm-hmm. even at a young age. But if it helps, I always advocate playing sports, because ultimately, you know, there's very few of us who are going to be talented enough to take it to any kind of next level.
Yeah,
but you still gain so much out of it. I would not trade. Of course, it does help that in a lot of cases I just pure luck. That's the other thing too about being on winning teams when you're playing in like a town league or a county league or a city league. It's pure luck who you have in your neighborhood. You know. Yeah, sure. I'm sure some underhanded stuff happens. In fact, the Little League World Series participants here in the U.S. got their championship stripped because of that type of stuff. But that's so minute compared to what, you know, what city sports and county sports and all that's really all about. That, yeah, winning made it nicer. But I honestly, like I said, I don't remember the winning and all that stuff other than pizza parties.
Right.
Legitimately, that was my reason for wanting to win and win more was pizza parties.
That's not a bad reason.
No, not as a 6 or 7 year old. Because, you know, mom and dad don't take you out for pizza all that often.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, hey, we win, we get a pizza party and a little plaque. Free stuff. Because legitimately, I laugh when I see these people talking about I had a killer instinct and a winning age when I was 7 years old playing Little League. No, you didn't. You know what I mean? You played for the same reason. Shiny trophy, because all children are attracted to tinfoil and pizza parties. So, but that's good. I'm glad he's having fun with it. That's awesome.
Yeah, oh, totally. It's I mean, anything that gets him up and moving around. I mean, as much as I talk about him playing video games, you know, quite a bit, he's the kind of kid who would rather be outside. And running and engaging, and you know, it definitely gets much more out of that.
Yeah, I'm actually glad you brought that up because I'd hate anybody listening to think that, you know, you're just letting your kid sit in front of a video game for 10 hours a day, because obviously we talk about Peter playing games on the show, but John and I are friends on Facebook, obviously, and I see, you know, little snippets of John's life, and yeah, it's painfully obvious that the kid's very active. He's a lot like I was when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I much prefer to be outside.
Yeah, I mean, especially now with the summer here, it's video games are just a way to unwind for an hour before he goes up to bed, more so than anything, you know.
Yeah, you know, I never thought about that concept. I mean, I suppose in a kind of way, this brutal summer heat we have is similar to your winter in the fact that you're really not going to go run around and play much during the middle. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it can kill you in a different way, but it can still do damage to you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When it gets to be 115/46, yeah, that's how you kill people. That's when I'm going to work at 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, so that I don't have to deal with it. It'd be done sooner, but yeah, it's. But anyways, yes, that's right. Wonder Pod endorses youth sports and wrestling. Oh, fucking, actually endorse sport. I endorse sports, period, because I find, maybe it's an old guy thing. I find every, and the funny thing is I'm not old, people, all right? I'm technically old, I suppose, but I feel like a 25-year-old most days, at least mentally. The body sometimes doesn't agree with that. But what was I going to say? What was I going to say? Oh, I guess the first thing let's talk about with you. Did you ever get Alien Isolations to work in a way that suited you well enough? The, as I've come to term it, PC gamer good enough, I really just want to play this fucking game setting.
Well, it's one of those funny things where I just continuously kept tweaking and tweaking and getting out of the game and back into the game, playing with my NVIDIA settings and all that fun stuff. I think I'm to the point where I could just say screw it and go ahead, and then I go on YouTube and I see some people who are, here's what I have done with my i5 NVIDIA, blah 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 blah, and it's like, man, it's way smoother than mine. I'm sure I could get mine to be better.
Oh no.
And I go back and tweak a little bit more, and then it gets a little bit worse, and I have to go back and find. And one thing that's kind of driving me crazy that I've quickly noticed is that there's no button that says reset to default settings
Oh no.
to go
No.
back where you were. Like, you have to delete some INI file and restart and go back to where it was. I don't know. This is
Well,
a
that's actually something I could walk you through because it sounds really scary, but that's actually a file you could delete 57 times and it'll never hurt the game. I don't know necessarily why you'd need that when you should be able to still change the settings back towards normal unless you didn't write them down, which most of us don't. What I
Right.
find humorous about this is you, whether you know it or not, in an attempt to play Alien Isolation, you're becoming a PC gamer. And I think the misnomer is, and I think it's important to point out, that for every game like this, John, there's 10 that are never like this. And I think you have understand that concept, but I think sometimes I swear our audience and gamers in general seem to think that every PC game is like that. It can be if you have this certain look and feel you're going for. And I've talked to some big time gamers, the guys that, are i7, multiple video cards, multiple RAM settings, and I try and get them to explain to me what's different. Because there are guys that'll tell you, like in something like DayZ, where the combat was not that great, Arma 2 DayZ, how they think the lag between running at 50, 60 frames per second and 30 frames per second affects them in combat that much. Because I'm not poking fun at them. If that's what they want to do and spend their time, money, and effort into doing, then I'm great about it. Except when they start being cockbags and think every last goddamn thing's got to run at it instantaneously. Then it, crosses the line. Because I just do not think there's that much lag, there's not much that much processing difference that me running at a comfortable 35 or 40 frames a second is really losing that many matches, especially in a game like DayZ. Maybe in COD it matters, or maybe in a game like AC. Spoke too fast, McGee, you idiot. An Alien Isolation, where you want to be able to hear and see things relatively quickly, it matters more. But there's so much of this that I think is just people buying into an archetype. And it scares other people away from PC gaming. That's why I've had no problem working with you on it. Because it's like, if I know that you're always kind of going to gravitate towards consoles, because it is easier. There's no doubt in my mind. There's at least once a week where I'm like, why didn't I just buy an Xbox One or PS4? legitimately think that. But because it shows you that, yeah, some of them have to be that way, but you can have a fun time on PC and not have to stress too much. Because I'm sure when you get it a little better, you feel satisfaction out of that. And I bet anything you're learning a little more about what you like about settings that could be then applied to other games when you feel like playing on PC. Do you think that's true? Do you think you're learning a little bit? And do you think, okay, I kind of understand what I need from my PC? And from games.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, just in terms of what settings do and what helps you maximize my just the smooth like this like just in isolation, I just want to be able to look around without everything looking a little bit jaggy. Or if you know, I'm not even a part of a game where I have a weapon in my hand yet. I'm just looking around, and I can tell that if I want to do a pinpoint, eventually I'm going to get some sort of a gun, I'm sure. If I want to, look at that lamp across the room, and it takes like that fraction of a second to get there, I'm like, this is not going to work. Like I remember when I played, what was it called? Metro. I played Metro on the PC,
Right.
and I played it on Xbox, but then I had it on PC as well, and you had played it, and you were talking about how its controls were really weird, and you couldn't get used to the aiming because it was so. Well, how did you describe it? You said it was kind of all over the place, right?
It just felt so touchy and sensitive, and then it just didn't feel very crisp. And the funny thing is, and that's where I was kind of going at with you last week, even though I think you were a little annoyed at me about the whole controller thing. Yeah, the game's made for a console, but PC controller lag from input can still even be different than it is on console, given what it has to go through to get to the game.
Yeah.
It won't be significant, but there's always probably going to be a little extra input lag than on a console that was born and bred for PC. And it's funny with Metro because I never could get that game to run, even with a wired 360 controller, to where it was tolerable for me. It just felt so clunky and like it wasn't turning sharp enough to get really good, down the sight jump on somebody firing at you. And when you had all the time in the world, it felt fine. And this is where I go a little, at least shooter elitist, but 9 times out of 10, when you see them first, who cares what the controls are? It's when another player or AI is firing at you first, and so you're already at a disadvantage, is the only time I want real crisp inputs. And I
Yeah.
never could get that with Metro. When I would see the enemies first, I would always do great, especially in that crappy subway system, the first part of Metro 2033. But when they had to jump on me, man, I just would get fucking hammered. And I
Yeah.
could not get to cover, could not, it just never felt right. And that's kind of what I understand about you with Alien Isolation, being able to need to look around. There's just a little hang up there, it sounds like. But you're also probably kind of understanding now why I said, well, I could give you some general hints, but without seeing the game, I'm not sure I can help you too much here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, my issue is literally like I can get the lag down to the point where I don't where it's fine for movement, and it feels very one to one,
Right.
but then what I'm looking at is not smooth. Like there's not jaggies, but there's a little bit of screen tearing going on, and I'm unable to find that balance between the two.
I wonder, and too, if that's just the port. Because again, it's like the Batman Arkham Asylum mess. This was built on console, I'm pretty sure, and ported to PC. If that's wrong, I'm sorry. But I'm talking to the audience, not you. So I'm wondering if there's what resolution settings are you set it on, or do you have it set on? I was just thinking of that too, because sometimes they're not 16:9, sometimes
Well, I've got it on, was it 1400 by 900, whatever the default for my monitor is.
Oh,
Is
okay.
that what you mean?
Is that your desktop's 1400 by 900 default?
I think so. That's what it tells me. If I press the button,
What button?
the settings button, it tells me what it's on.
Oh, yeah, that might be lying to you. Let me see. Hold on. Let me see. This makes for a great podcast, doesn't it, people?
Yeah, Bruce is gonna help me troubleshoot my setup, and he can't even see it, let alone my.
Well, no, there's a general thing I'm trying to remember. Fuck. I will talk to you about it later, but your monitor might not be on 1400 by 900 because the video card takes over on actual screen resolution. What your monitor settings are telling you and what the actual resolution may be two different things.
Like it says under information, it says current settings 1440 by 900 60 hertz. Recommended settings 1440 by 960 hertz.
And that's the monitor itself, not the desktop screen.
Exactly, yeah. That's what when I'm pressing the buttons on the monitor,
Okay.
that's what the monitor says.
That could very well be part of your problem. You might try jacking up the resolution because you're, let's use a simple term, overclocking the game doesn't mean it's going to mess up your monitor. Like, I don't think the older of my two Asus monitors is supposed to be running at 1920 by 1080, but I run it there anyway. Now, that's not true 1080p. It's both through DVI because I hate HDMI. I can't get used to it on these tiny monitors. It drives me bonkers. I can't get my desktop the way I like it. And so I run natively 1920 by 1080 on both these monitors, and I drop my resolution all the time to increase performance. And sometimes if I drop it too low, the game does get jaggy. So remind me after the show, I will tell you some settings to try in the game, and if it doesn't freak your monitor out, then all the better. I would say with the setup you've got, you should be able to run 1600 by 900, 16:9 ratio, I think. But you're gonna have to tell me. Are you using a TV? Okay, just making sure. I couldn't remember what you hooked it up to. So I think maybe we could fix that with the resolution, and I kind of feel like a dumbass that I didn't ask you that in the first place. Because sometimes what the monitor settings say and what Windows is actually running are two completely different things. It gets really confusing because I had never seen the actual resolution numbers, the such and such by such and such for 720p videos. And it kept telling me it wanted to render some of my YouTube videos at like 1280 by 1280 by 740. And I'm like, fuck you. Why don't you just render them at 800 by 600? Because this HD thing has kind of messed up us old PC guys who are used to just X by X resolution.
Right.
1280 by 740 was not good. That was like my 64-bit card way back in the day. So that actually might help it a little bit. So have you actually been able to play it, or are you still tinkering too much to play it?
I've been tinkering a bit too much to play it, and I've been focusing on playing, getting through Tesla Grad up until I finished it yesterday. So, and once I did so, I'm now free to pick something else to play, and I've been sampling a few things in the meantime, and I think it is Isolation that I want to play, but it's hard to do while Peter's sitting there, though he's incredibly interested in it, because I was sitting here at the computer while he was here in my rec room, and I was just checking. This was long before I bought it, and I was just looking at some of the videos they had there and their screenshots and on Steam and looking at the price and the specs and stuff when I was trying to decide whether I wanted to get it or not, and he came over and I had watched the videos, and there's nothing particular, there's nothing nasty in those videos. It's a little suspenseful, but there's no gore, there's nothing bad in those trailers, and he watched a couple, and Wanda knows what the alien movies are, and she was aghast at what I had done, and I said no, I've watched these, like nothing happens in them. At all, like someone running through the corridors, and you see an alien, but he just stands there. He doesn't do anything. You know what I mean? And so long story short, I was tinkering with it yesterday, and Peter was playing some Splatoon while I was doing that, and on the chair next to me, and I found out today that he told Wanda, "I think Daddy was playing that alien game while I was sitting there." That game has blood in it. He told me so. And I was like, no, I was in a single room trying to optimize the controls.
I've actually watched the whole playthrough of Alien Isolation, so it's definitely not a game for a 5-year-old. That is
Oh,
for
it
sure.
is most certainly not. But I mean, just those trailers that they have on the Steam page, like nothing happens in them. There's just people talking and someone walking, precariously through the ship.
I'm definitely glad I watched a playthrough of it, but I'm also really sure that I would not have. That's just not my bag, but I think you will enjoy it immensely once you get it up and running a little bit. I definitely wouldn't let the issues you've had stop you from playing it unless it just becomes unplayable, something you can't, because that would be the next step. Play it a while and see if that stuff starts to fade in the background. Because I mean, hey, I'm making no bones about it. Dump in a disc or download a file and play on a console. That's why you see so many of them throwing a fit when there's any kind of screen tearing. And I have a hard time having sympathy for them. It's like, just play the fucking game, you assholes. Because they're so used to, it's kind of like Halo players when 343 finally lost the Bungie touch and had problems with their multiplayer servers. It's just like that. It just was one of those deals, cases of shit's gonna happen sometimes. But once you get it as close to correct as you think you can, then you go through it, and then you play for a while and see if you can stand it. It's always so funny, folks at home, on my Steam account, when I'm sitting there playing a game and I see somebody, so-and-so started playing this 2 minutes later. So-and-so started playing this 2 minutes later. So-and-so started playing this. You know that there's a heavy-duty tinkering session going on. I see it all the time with all my Steam friends.
That's definitely what I was doing yesterday.
I saw it a couple times and I thought, oh, okay. Actually, my thought was I was in the middle of a scenario in Arma 3, a single player scenario, a user created mission, and I kind of stopped and I hit escape and I watched it come up one more time and I'm like, I really hope John's getting it to where he can play it because I really want him to have a good time with it. And then I just went back to what I was doing. That's why sometimes you'll see me go offline on Steam. If you're a friend of mine on Steam and you see me go offline, it's not because I'm trying to avoid people or, ooh, I'm emo, I need to be left alone. It's legitimately because I'm playing a game where I just don't want to see people's names popping up, or I'm recording it, where I also really don't want to be showing off other people's accounts on YouTube, Not that there's really much people can do with it, but I'm not going to do that to my friends either. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
You seeing your Steam name, nobody can do anything with that, but it's just common courtesy to me. And it does make for a slightly better video when there's names popping up all the time. Sometimes there ain't shit you can do about it. Agent K will mess with me. He'll message me even though I'm offline because he knows damn good and well what I'm doing. But in a lot of cases, if I'm playing something where I'm really, and this is something I'd recommend to other people to play on Steam, if you're playing something where you really want to get immersed, just go offline because then you're not getting bothered. You're not being rude. You're just trying to immerse yourself as much as possible in the game. I did it with Dishonored, and I found it to be a lot better experience when I did that. Then I could just get immersed in being this dude.
Yeah, I like that too sometimes.
Yeah, it's nice. I kind of wish you could do that on Xbox Live a little bit easier. Because it's just sometimes you just don't want to talk to people. You just want to play a game and you're kind of into it. I did it once or twice with Enslaved because I was just getting to the point where it's like, I love you like a brother, Pat, but I don't want to talk to you right now. I really want to get through this. And that's the thing. You don't want to be rude to anybody either.
No.
It's like all my Steam friends are, and all the people on X, I have on friends list on Xbox Live, which just start dwindling since I no longer have an Xbox Live Gold account. They're all on there for a reason. And so most of the time I want to be there. Somebody wants to do something. Somebody wants to talk. Whatever. But there's some gaming, like when you play Alien Isolation, it's a prime example. I would just go offline and just smooth sailing. Nobody bugging you. Nobody doing anything. I'm glad that game ended up being as good as it was because Aliens Colonial Marines was such a mess from Gearbox that I think some people lost faith in the Aliens franchise having any potential to produce good games anymore. That I was pretty happy. Pretty happy when it got favorable reviews and everybody seemed to like it quite a bit. So.
Yeah, I mean, everything I've heard has been good stuff. I mean, it has, very few wrinkles. So.
Exactly. So you finished Tesla grad, you're thinking about working on
Isolation.
Alien Isolation. Anything else?
Well, I like I said, I've been sampling a couple of things. I tried a little bit of Azura's Wrath on 360. I got the I got it on sale once, or I got it on a, if it was a free game or not. But I tried the first level of that. That was interesting. You know, over the top, just craziness. I think I've talked about that before when I played the demo. It was much like it was, I think it might have been the, even the same. The first level is the demo, I think. But then I also played a little bit today. I played a little bit of what was it? Dust on Elysian Tale, or and it's just a side-scrolling beat 'em up game, action game with. It seems to have a little bit of Metroid dashed in there because you're getting some upgrades as you go, and I found some places where you can backtrack on the map and go to new areas. So that's the kind of game I have it, and it's definitely up my alley. But just coming off a Metroid game, I might not play that one, I think. Though it does have the beat 'em up, like lots of combos and you know, getting bonuses for that kind of stuff and some magical power stuff is it's pretty fun too. But I think I want to stick with or try something, a palate cleanser, if you will. And I think Alien Isolation will do that for me. There's a couple more games that I was playing around with on my Wii U. I have two games. One is called The Swapper, and I have one called The Fall. And it's funny how similar these two games are, even though at The Swapper you create clones of yourself to hit switches in your area and in your areas to move forward, and like you sacrifice your clones to advance. And the other one, I didn't get very far. You have to do a lot of scanning. Again, these are both seemingly very Metroid-y type games, but the when you start out both games, you are a space, some kind of space. I don't know if you're a space marine, but you're some sort of a space guy who's landed on a planet that's kind of abandoned, and you have a flashlight. And they're both, and so you start off in these very dark environments, like in a cave, and you're just pointing this flashlight around to see where you are, see what's around you, and they almost look exactly the same. And so I probably won't play those again because they're sort of Metroid-y, and nothing wrong with a Metroid game. I just want something a little different. Yeah, I think that's all I've been playing around with.
Sorry about that. I had Skype minimized. Yeah, you definitely should try some different in-game resolutions without being an LCD monitor. It's not going to hurt it. The factory set, and leave it to fucking HP. My mother's got one of their printers. Oh, I want another HP this time. All she does is bitch about it because their printers suck. At least karmically, I've never had good luck with one. I've owned Between the family and I have owned three or four of them. Every one of them's been a screaming piece of shit. But their monitors are good. I shouldn't crap on HP or that. I mean, my friggin' laptop's compact and it's basically HP. But you should be able to easily up the resolution settings on the game and not have it flip out the monitor.
To what?
To 1600 by 900 or something like that.
Okay.
Worst case scenario, you'll have to hit Control Alt Delete and go to Task Manager because it's going to make the screen go black. That will
Right.
be panic inducing when you first see it, but it's just a simple Control Alt Delete and cuss me and call me whatever name you feel like calling me. But while you were talking about the other games you played, I looked up that monitor and read up on it, and it should. I would say that Alien Isolation is new enough, 1920 by 1080 would probably be a little too much for your rig, but definitely play with the resolution settings at least up to 1600 by 900, and I think that might take away some of the screen tearing.
Okay.
Because it may not have been optimized for down to 1440 by 900,
Right.
would be my suspicion there. But again, and that's the thing. Like, I can have John get a free recording program, record me a little piece of video, give it to me. But that's kind of always the other bitch about PC gaming in general is I've picked up a ton of knowledge over the last, 20 years or whatever, but it's so case by case basis. And I think again, it circles right back to what pisses me off so much about these. It's all going to be 1920 by 1080, 60 frames per second, or we're going to riot. every PC built is different. You can have the same, you know, John and I share pretty much the same, I think it's Gen 1 or Gen 2 i5, same memory, two different video cards, two different rigs. You know, and not every memory stick's built the same. Not every i5's built the same. Not every i7's built the same. They all have their quirks. So, sometimes what I can do on my rig, John Net can't necessarily do on his rig, and vice versa.
Yeah.
But that would be my recommendation. Just hit me up on Facebook when you're trying to do it this weekend, and I'll tell you the numbers again, and I can help you again. But the only thing I've played, and it's going to lead into a topic that I want to talk about, is Arma 3. I got back into that. It just really was it's been a stressful week, and shooters helped me take out my aggravation. So I was playing some scenarios, and I played this really great set of scenarios, and I apologize, I don't think I've got your name right, but I'm pretty sure because it was spelled all in lead speak. I played a set of scenarios by this dude called Reaper, and there's some other guys that helped him out with it, with music and some of the other stuff. Oh man, for user-created scenario missions, these things are just well done. He's worked in a revive system that the AI can revive you, which never happens in Arma 3. You're usually in a single-player scenario, you die, you're fucked. You gotta start from your last save point. Which, you know, because Arma's supposed to be more realistic of the shooters. Right, you know. He's worked in a ton of stuff that I was so pissed it took me this long to find this guy's stuff. And that's kind of what I wanted to roll into a little bit of a statement is Steam needs to stop adding new features to their platform and work on making their existing ones better.
Mm-hmm.
They just need to stop. I understand they're onto VR and Steam machines, which are going to flop worse than a fat guy belly flopping off the high dive. We almost legitimately can say they already have, but I'm not that mean, as much as people would like you to believe the contrary, but I'm willing to give them a chance, still, but and then they'll probably oya me, you know, the last little micro technology I gave a chance to, and it just blew up my face nicely, but product that good shouldn't be buried in the Steam workshop because the cool kiddies want to play Hitman on Arma 3. Because that's legitimately what was burying this. Or shit that claims it's like DayZ. Or shit that claims it's like this or that. It's like this dude does a really, really, really good job. And I still haven't finished them all. There's one I'm never going to finish. Because it's too hard. Well, you have to kill all these enemy dudes. You're basically doing a patrol. You're basically doing a patrol and there's civilians. You got to check civilians. Some of them have guns. They're going to try and shoot you like point blank in the face. Some of them are wired with bombs. And it gets to a point where you have to kill all the bad guys before they kill too many civilians. I've tried it 3 times. My guys die so fucking often. You're trying to revive them. It's just a clusterfuck. But it's a pretty realistic simulation. Not even close to the real thing, but it gives you a sense of what a mess, you know, Iraq and Afghanistan must have been for combat troops.
Right.
When you have a mix of civilians, you have a mix of these people trying to hurt you and civilians to do their thing. But it was buried in the Steam Workshop, and it's like, damn. And again, it also ties back into somebody like you that if you had a game where I'm playing something on it from the Steam Workshop, and I would think it would appeal to you, there's too many steps involved for me to explain it to you to make it worth your time in a lot of cases. And that's kind of sad in a way. You know, that Steam has spread itself so thin that some stuff that really works well is just not being curated well enough.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because this was literally like 5 pages into single-player scenarios where I found this guy's first... The first one I found and played, I can tell you at least the name of that. Yay for McGee not doing any of his homework and talking about himself in third person again, you idiot. It's called The Long Way Home. And that one, it literally took me 2 hours.
Hmm.
Partly because that map is huge. And there was no possibility to get vehicles. You were walking everywhere. Oh, that's the other thing the guys added in. Because Arma's so realistic, and you've heard me bitch about this before, John. And it was kind of actually interesting, in a way, that this fixed the problem. you know, it seems like an arm, you can't go 25 meters without wheezing like a 500-pound fat guy at the YMCA. I mean, it just legitimately is like, really? These are highly trained soldiers. They got all these ripped muscles and they can't run 50 meters? Carrying a pack that's not even technically overweight by your little bar at the bottom that tells me how much equipment I'm carrying? Come on now. Well, this guy, or one of the guys that helped him with it, scripted in a thing that tells you where your stamina's going. And when it, you know, it starts green and it starts climbing and it goes up faster if you're going uphill, it goes up faster if you're sprinting. I think he's still using the same broken-ass Arma idea of, or Bohemia idea of you know, in fine condition and about to drop dead from a heart attack. But the fact that you have a bar telling you, you can manage it better. And he's just put all these great little touches in it, and it's just a shame that it's buried in the steam sower. The scenario that I do remember the name of, I'm going to say it one more time, is The Long Way Home. If you have Arma 3, if you like that kind of shooter game, go check it out on the Steam Workshop. Just, I can tell you, just put in A Long Way Home, and it'll pop up, because that's how I did it. I actually found a PC Gamer article that had it on there as, you know, good scenarios and missions to play. But it's just really a shame. And the other thing that I wanted to talk about in games I've kind of been playing. Last Saturday, because of the way I work in the summertime with the stuff we do on the ranch, I was feeling like I needed a few beers, so I bought some Blue Moon. It's a beer I like. It's a good beer, but it's a little heavy, and so sometimes I forget that I shouldn't drink as many of them, because it's got a little more kick to it. And so I bought this game that Agent K and I were thinking about playing called Outer Reach, and I jumped on a public server, and I thought, I'm drunk. This is a perfect time to deal with trolls and noobs and DayZ style. I'm going to get killed 57 times before I figure out what I'm doing. No, legitimately anymore these days, if I'm drunk, I just find it funny. I don't get angry. That's just hilarious then. It's like, ah, fuck it, you killed me again. Oh, well, you got my rock. I'm out of here. I'll be back. You know, I don't get as worked up about it. It's just I relax enough with the alcohol that I just don't care. The problem was, is the game was $20. The biggest, the most busy North American server I could find was 8 people. The European servers, because, you know, I was scouting this for Agent Keggs. He'd been drug off somewhere into the Highlands for somebody to do evil things to him, if I remember. I don't remember what he was doing that night. Well, that, and it was way late. He was probably already in bed. But, and I played it, and I ran around in it for about 45 minutes. Had dinner, which, you know, food sobered up a little bit. Thought, better give it a second chance. Ran around in it again for about 30 minutes. Farting about. I looked in the crafting menus. I looked at all this stuff. You know, I play so many survival games. Like, you get a general sense of, is this worth me putting more time into? And I just went, this game might be good down the road, but it's just not good now. And I thought, well, I do a podcast. We've been talking about Steam refunds, and I really don't see myself spending any more time in this clunker. Only got 50 minutes into it. I'm refunding this bitch. Let's see how painless this Steam refund really is.
Yeah, how was that?
Now, I was hoping to have a horror story. Just because being contrarian and making fun of Steam makes good podcasts. I'm happy to report, though, that, by the way, that last bit was sarcasm. If you didn't catch that, go look up sarcasm in the dictionary. If it had been a horror story, yeah, it would have still made a good podcast, but that's legitimately not what I was hoping for. I don't remember, again, due to alcohol, if I clicked on it on the page itself or on the game itself, or if I went up into the Steam menu, but I just clicked Steam support. They had a little click that said refunds, asked me why I wanted a refund, gave them the legitimate reason it just wasn't for me, even though I think the game might have enough in the future that I might buy it again, which is fair enough because then the devs will get the money. And so I was expecting to be asked a lot more things. You know, so that, because people were worried about trolling and, oh my God, you're killing sales. And legitimately, that was all they asked me. And they sent me, or I sent it off on my Steam account. And then in my email, almost instantaneously, it said, your request has been received. We'll notify you, you know, basically with the results. And I think about 45 minutes later, they notified me that my refund had been granted, that I would get it within 7 business days, which kind of makes sense because, you know, you want to kind of pile up a selection of refunds before you send them back. I would think that's probably easier on their accounting, and I'm okay with it. Seemed a little long in this new age of instant everything. And let's see, I did that on Saturday. Yes, I did it on Saturday. I got the refund sometime Tuesday. And I had them, because I didn't want to mess with my PayPal account, and transferring back from your PayPal account into a checking account as a pain in the ass, and I don't need that $20 anyway for anything specific. I just left it in my, I had them refunded to my Steam account, so I now have $20 in my Steam account. It went pretty painlessly. Okay. It was under 14 days. It was under 2 hours. I'd only played 50 minutes in it. Steam didn't ask any questions, you know. So it works, legitimately works. You know, and for those of you that think I took money from some poor dev rather than hanging on to it and seeing what they do, like I have with other survival games, just so I could talk about it on the podcast, that was not my intention. I thought, hey, this would be great for the podcast as a byproduct. But as I said to Agent K when I talked to him about it, we have so many of these that we're waiting to see updates to see what they do, that, and there just wasn't enough there that differentiated it from other survival games we play. And a lot of the stuff that they showed in a trailer and kind of a primitive release build that they let some YouTubers and stuff play, none of that was in, and it was supposed to be at launch. And so it's like, yeah, these guys might get somewhere. And the other big thing, and any survival game creators that might be listening, you all have to learn the concept of crude tools. Like, one of the first things that turned me off was, it's like, okay, I got to get fairly set up to get any kind of tools whatsoever other than this rock you gave me, which they borrowed from Rust. You know, and so it's like, you need to give me kind of something in between that I'm settled in a structure and the naked and afraid, you know, portions of gameplay. It's almost a have to at this point with me. It's, you know, maybe not a have to, but it's definitely going to give you a lot more points in your favor and definitely going to keep me much more interested in your game longer. Mm-hmm. But bottom line, Steam refunds work really, really, really well. And so that's kind of nice to see that Steam hasn't bollocksed it up, to borrow a term from our British friends or UK friends, you know, that it works. It was painless.
Yeah. That's pretty good then.
I guess last thing we'll talk about tonight, if this is, I don't even know what our runtime is yet. Don't really give a shit either. Okay, John, so I saw some interesting stuff this week. Some interesting interesting numbers, let's call it. So, you remember a couple weeks ago where basically we said that, or we had numbers from NPD that basically said Sony, and I'm rounding off, or it's used for, it made made easier for discussion purposes numbers. Basically, Sony sold 20 million units of the PS4. And that Microsoft had sold 12 million units of the Xbox One. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I sort of remember, yeah.
Some Sony muckety-muck, and I wasn't interested enough, again, homework, we don't do it, to recall the gentleman's name, made the claim this week that, according to Sony's numbers, they have 70 to 90% of the install base in mainland Europe. Now,
what percent?
70 to 90.
Okay.
Now, what I want you to help me with is 20 million and 12 million means that Sony has an 8 million lead on MS. To get to 70 or 90% of consoles being used in Europe, doesn't that number have to be bigger, or am I missing a way this could work?
Yeah, you kind of would think, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'm not the greatest math or maths, hi UK friends, matician or maticians, on the planet, but these are numbers from NPD that both Sony and Microsoft said, yep, that's correct. I mean, the only way it would work is if they've sold almost no consoles in North America.
Or there's only There's only how many million people in Europe at all?
Well, they were talking about mainland Europe, so they essentially meant Western Europe.
Yeah.
But still. My point here is, this is where gamers need to get over their fanboyism and backlash at them enough to treat us like... I'll put it another way. To not treat us like turnips they're dumping shit fertilizer on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's insulting. It's like you have, again, it's like the early thing with WCW. That's right. Things are all tying in together. Imagine that.
Bookends.
Yeah. It's a once in a blue moon thing. It's like Halley's Comet. Enjoy it while it lasts, people. I don't like this much order. I prefer much more chaos. But you have a lead. You're doing so much better than you did with the PS3. Stop it. You know, you're making me not want to support your company by being this stupid.
Just be happy.
And I read the quote a number of times, and it's like I couldn't make it make sense. And the other thing too is like, do you think people are so stupid that numbers without proof of said numbers is really that compelling to people? Like, to the average gamer or average person in general?
Nah, is it something they can put into a bloody press release?
Like, I'm sure, did you have to show your work when you were in elementary school in math?
Yep.
I did, too. Why can't we have that now? I guess they're just trying to preach to the choir. Because, I mean, you really, for those of you that are Sony fanboys and are going, oh, you must be an Xbox One fanboy, you're an Xbox 360 last generation, yeah. I also got a foot that I could stuff up your ass. That's actually... I've got a little bit of a... my nose is a little bit stuffed up. So that made that even more classic.
That was good.
But if I'm drunk enough, I can actually do Urkel. There's no way I'm ever appearing on this show that drunk, because there wouldn't be a show. Recorded? You'd be lucky if I wasn't swinging my underwear over my head. I have to be really drunk. But anyway, they don't. Does this count people that like bought the? Does this count if people bought the PS4 first, and then bought an Xbox One? like, what about the households that have both? How do they fit into this scenario?
Can you imagine if you have both?
I know people that have both. Agent K doesn't count. He gets his through ill-gotten means. Actually, I'm not. Which, those ill-gotten memes didn't really annoy me until he got a fucking NVIDIA Titan card.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm like, you prick. I'm like, why'd you even tell me that? He got it from his work. I hope they make him give it back. Oh, we need it back at the studio. Give it back. That is a really nice card. It's like $1,000 card. Oh, it wouldn't even run in our rigs, but it's just like, no. Jesus Christ, dude. Well, it's basically power. It's not that it fit in the slot. It's just power supply. I've upgraded my power supply from what our gateways came with, bone stock, and I don't think mine would run it. It'd probably run the card, but it wouldn't run the rest of my PC.
Mm-hmm.
Would be the problem. PCs don't do well with half power. Well, no. Not many electronics do well with half power. But I just, again, it's just. I did it mostly to see what John's reaction would be when I gave it to him in that context of, we know what the numbers are. You know? Because, again, and maybe I am being a little biased towards MS, maybe, but I didn't see the press throwing parades, and I'm not saying they really are now, but I didn't see gamerdom in general throwing parades when the 360 had an 8 million lead. 8 million doesn't seem like an ass-kicking. Am I wrong in that? Is that enough to go, yeah, it's a pretty sizable lead? It seems like to be a true beatdown, it'd have to be, like, double. Like, 10 or 12 million.
Yeah, to be a real super beat. I mean, it is a substantial lead, but it's not like Wii numbers.
Yeah, exactly, because the PS3 caught up by the end of the cycle. And if you want to be fair and legit, you count the whole cycle. And kind of the way I look at it, it was, well, that means we have a pretty healthy gaming industry, because a lot of people bought PS3s as the generation went along. Yeah, maybe they had both, but they ended up selling pretty similar numbers. I think Xbox 360 still had a few million lead by the time it was all over said and done, and they're both still for sale, I think. I don't remember. You know, so, I mean, it kind of comes down to, but Sony's done that dumbass shit before with, oh, look how many units the PS2 sold, greatest selling console ever. Yeah, that's because you left it on the market halfway through the PS3's life cycle. You leave anything on the market, of course it's going to sell the most. Do you think this cycle's going to last that long? Do you think that with all these new tech peripheral goodies that they're coming up with, do you think the cycle's going to last as long this time?
Yeah, I think it'll depend on the demand. If people are looking for higher res, if VR takes off and people want higher res VR and home consoles that can keep up the turn up the horsepower that they want, it won't last that long. No. But I mean, I can't see them upping the horsepower to make even more expensive games than they're making now. Like nothing will come out ever. but it'll depend on consumer demand, I think.
Oh, here's one from a kind of back alley website. I don't know if they have kind of a bent or a play. It's a guy I followed on Twitter that basically, let's see, Shuhei Yoshida told Edge in a recent interview that The Glass Guardian was most likely have been canceled if not for the passion of the fans. Is that fucking pandering?
A little bit.
Yeah. I mean, hey, great. If that's the truth, then good on Sony for listening to the fans. But when it comes to The Last Guardian, I'm so skeptical at this point. I don't trust any of them. It's not Sony. It's not more Sony bashing. I don't trust T. Michael. I don't trust anybody. Especially not with a crapper of a freaking demonstration or, you know, footage they had. You know, this time at this E3.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was pretty interesting. I just popped up my Twitter feed. Oh, the other thing, too, John, you know how I've kind of been hemming and hawing on Star Wars Battlefront?
Yep.
I think I finally figured out it's come down to the fact that I don't think a lot of these old-timer nerds that are getting really excited to play another Battlefront understand that the Battlefield community will be involved in multiplayer. So it's essentially going to become Battlefield with Star Wars skin. I'm not sure I have the patience anymore to deal with that. I was thinking about it today when I was mowing the lawn, and I thought that is really what in the back of my mind is nagging me about Star Wars Battlefront. I just don't have the patience for the common shooter fan anymore. Console or PC, there is no fucking difference. You know? And I think, honestly, that's why it was nagging at me of why I don't like these FPSs that are going away from single player. You gotta give me some kind of haven I can dump into when I've had it with being called all kinds of offensive names by a squeaky 7-year-old. For an hour and a half, you know?
Yeah.
And so, my hope is that longtime Battlefront fans get a fun experience out of it. I'm just worried that how much the community of shooter gamers has changed. Because I don't think, you're going to hear my loud noisy keyboard. I got to see what year Battlefront 2 came out. Because I don't think we had VoIP at that point. Which would have been 2005, voice was kind of becoming a thing, but 10 years has changed shooters dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
I remember using Battlecom a little bit before I moved to Alabama in 2005, but it was nothing like it is today. So I'm actually a little worried that people who love Star Wars Battlefront 2 are going to find the multiplayer experience to be distasteful, not because it's not complete and doesn't have space battles, because it's just shooter gaming has changed a shit ton in 2000 or in 10 years, and a lot of it not for the good. But if it does right now, if it has a pretty good single player co-op for me and Agent K to play. If it had, and then of course Agent K will talk me into playing multiplayer with him, which is fine as long as I got him as a running buddy. I'm pretty happy. I'll probably end up getting it right at launch. The nice bonus would be is if Sony and MS got their shit together and found a way to make it so we can all play together.
Yeah.
I
That would be fun.
don't see it happening. I see maybe MS doing it if you have Windows 10, which I suspect by that point I will have made the jump to Windows 10. I know damn good and well K will have. So, but that will be the high, nice unexpected bonus. So I'm probably gonna get it, but I'm thinking that there's not much of a chance I'll spend a mass amount of time in the multiplayer, because I'm so much into much slower, more tactical shooter games these days, and not because I'm slowing down with age, just because I find them more, being able to shoot a guy at 500 meters and then not see his buddy who spends 10 minutes looping around behind you, only to lose a quick draw battle because ARMA's combat's never been all that great close up. There's more strategy to that. There's more satisfaction from that
Right.
to me than just spinning round after round, blowing up stuff and people screaming cheating, even though it's like, there's no way. There, it's just nothing happened that was cheating. But anyways, that's enough show from us. It's pretty good too, man. I didn't know what we
Yeah.
were gonna do, and we got it. But we have a bunch of ways you can get with touch of. Oh, fuck. Cut. Just cut that idea. But anyways, if you'd like to get in touch with us, we have a ton of ways for you to do that. The first off is our Facebook. It's WonderPod Online. WonderPod Online, shoot us a friend request. Unless you're an obvious bot, we will accept. We have a website. It's wonderpodonline.com. Wonderpodonline.com, where right now the only thing being posted is the podcast, which is kind of what wonderpodonline.com was to be at its very minimum. I'm kind of trying to figure out what I want to do with YouTube at this point, so I'm not posting many videos. But cool thing about the podcast is there's an embedded player. So if you want to listen to it on a web browser, just go to our website and you can do that. We are on iTunes for those of you that want an MP3. Just search WonderPod. If you don't like iTunes, and some people don't, we are on archive.org. It's also the best place to go to our entire catalog, which also includes some Calgary wrestling. John and I do some spoiler casts, some two-man reviews, so all kinds of stuff. Just go to archive.org. We have some YouTube channels. The Olivia Made This YouTube channel, the Glacinator YouTube channel, the Chris What Chris Does YouTube channel, my YouTube channel, where right now the only thing new I've got posted is me taking a free tune and Worm Online and dropping him off the tallest building we could build. It was pretty funny. And it's a really short video. It's like 30 seconds. I'd recommend checking it out just to watch me kill a guy. lost my train. We have a Twitter account. It's at WonderPodOnline. All one word, at WonderPodOnline. And if none of that works for you, we have an email address. It's wonderpod@wonderpodonline.com. wonderpod@wonderpodonline.com. Or you can follow me on Twitter at ORIGIM. Or you can follow John on Twitter.
At John Keogh, JonKehoe.
Until episode 260. I'm out of here. See you, people.
Cheers.